Welcome to the September edition of the Delta County Commissioner's Report. I'm Felix Belmont. Joining me today is Ms. Allie Lightfoot, Program Director on the staff of KVNF. We will jointly interview our guest, Mr. Mark Rober, County Commissioner for District 3. Mark, thank you for taking the time to come in and talk with us today.
Appreciate the invitation, Felix. Always glad to come in.
The Delta County Independent reported today that all fire restrictions imposed during this past summer's severe drought conditions have been lifted in Delta, Mesa, and Montrose counties and on National Forest and BLM lands. Is this correct as far as Delta County is concerned, and how effective were these restrictions?
Yes, that is correct. We passed a resolution yesterday doing away with the Stage 1 fire restrictions. It was a big success in Delta County. We had basically no fires and no man-made fires at all. We had a couple of really small fires started from lightning, which we have. It doesn't pay any attention to Stage 1, but
yeah.
but it was a real success. People were very careful and really responded well, and it helped out. And it's a little questionable. Some people probably don't think it should even be lifted because we haven't gotten that much moisture, but we try and coordinate with the federal agencies and with neighboring counties to where people don't have to worry about crossing a line and having a different set of rules.
I asked Commissioner Don Supas when he was our guest last month on this program to comment on the following subject, and I ask you now for a further update. If there is any, has there been any progress in the plan to utilize the silt accumulating in the Paonia Dam to manufacture brick in a proposed new plant which would be powered by methane gas that is plentiful in the area of the dam?
Well, it's still in the preliminary stages. There's a individual from here in Paonia that's actually going through the program at Western State College for entrepreneurs that's looking at it as a business. It's part of the coal mine methane working group, which I'm a co-chair of. And we're trying to work through all the hoops to that. I can't really say that it's imminent, but we continue.
You think it's going to be a thing?
Well, it's possible. I won't say right now because there's, for one thing, it's hard to pin down the BLM on exactly what the rules are about capturing the methane. They don't know whether to really treat it as coal mine methane or whether to treat it as oil and gas. And there seems to be a confusion within the BLM on that. And at some point, the methane working group is probably going to have to put forth a proposal, and then the BLM will take it and work with it and see what they can do with it. But they don't have a clear-cut answer as to how to even treat the methane as far as royalties or anything else. So it's kind of experimental new ground that we're looking at.
Allie?
Yeah, so I was wondering about a meeting that's going to take place on October 17th with the Delta County Planning Commission to discuss possible elimination of the area planning committees. Or another option might be to expand the Planning Commission to include 3 associate members, and the associate members would not be able to vote unless they're representing an absent Planning Commission member. And we've talked at length about this on other commissioner reports, but I'm wondering, you know, there was so much work that went into creating these committees and to have them be a part of the decision-making process. And now it seems like we're talking about getting rid of them. So who are the proponents of eliminating these committees and why?
Well, the county has been looking at this for quite a while. And part of the reason is it was hard to find, number one, it was hard to find applicants to fill them. And in fact, the Delta area, we did away with that area planning committee several years ago. The North Fork and LaRue Creek were about the only two that really were left. And it remains somewhat troublesome. And trying to streamline the whole planning process is basically what we were looking at, because it tied up staff. It was another meeting that staff had to travel to, and trying to get a quorum, and most of the time there wasn't a quorum unless there was some controversial issue. And so we're trying to streamline the process and make it a little bit quicker to get through, to where it's not so cumbersome. And that was the idea behind it. The area planning committees, you know, I might just add that, you know, they started in the mid-90s after the last master plan. And I was on that ad hoc group that actually recommended them. And the reason we recommended them was there was such division when we went around with the master plan. There was such division within a county as to do anything. And so we recommended that, okay, maybe each community kind of does their own thing. But and that's where the planning committees came about. Subsequently, they were supposed to come up with more or less a zoning plan, which never was done. So they've kind of outlived their what they were intended to do originally. And we're trying to unify the county somewhat, and that's kind of been the movement while we're doing that. And, you know, I think there's always an issue. I mean, it doesn't matter what part of government you look at. Somebody says, I'm not represented. Well, it is a representative government, and you have to represent all people. So
that is a perfect lead up to my next question.
Okay.
The county commissioners unanimously supported the pending oil and gas lease sale in December. The commissioner's comment was included in the BLM's environmental assessment. The town of Paonia's was not. So there's two questions about this. First, do you have any comment as to why the BLM omitted the town of Paonia's comment from the environmental assessment? And second, the town of Paonia and Governor Hickenlooper wrote letters requesting a postponement, but the commissioners are not taking this into consideration.
Well, I wouldn't say we aren't taking it into consideration. We tried to be consistent with what we've done in the past. And in the past, we have said, you know, go ahead and lease it. We will work through the details as they come. We still support responsible energy development. The question is, with any of the leases in this area, at the price of natural gas, we're looking at maybe one well a year, maybe two, but this isn't Garfield County. It's not 2005. The projections of natural gas prices, the energy conferences I've been to, they're projecting them to stay low. So you're not going to see a boom. And on the other hand, you know, I think it's with not being a boom, slow energy development is a lot easier to get a handle on and make sure that it's done right. Because when it's a boom and bust in the boom periods, it's hard to keep up. If they're drilling so many wells and you're trying to regulate them and keep people doing things right. So, you know, that's what we've always supported, and that's basically what the letter was about. And As far as the town of Peonia's not being included, I have no idea. I'm not going to defend the BLM. I don't know what they were doing.
Just leaving out Peonia?
I have no idea of what that was about. Whether it was intentional, whether it was, you know, just an error, I really don't know.
Well, both the town of Peonia and the governor were just wanting to postpone it until the environmental impact statement was produced by the BLM.
My personal feeling, and this is just my personal feeling, I don't really speak for all the commissioners on this, but usually delay tactics, there's a reason for that, and it's just delay, delay, delay. There's never a satisfaction. And most of the area with the past Bull Mountain environmental assessment and all that, we spent 7 years in that process. So, you know, it kind of gets to a point of, I don't think we can pretty well justify what's going to happen, especially with, in reality, when it's 1-2 wells a year. The impact's not going to be that great.
Another concern from 3rd District listeners that I've spoken to recently is in regards to fracking as well. And it's, besides water getting contaminated, proposed fracking operations would use a lot of water. So where would this water come from? In a drought like we had this year, there's not even enough water to, you know, water our crops. And each well takes, you know, millions of gallons. What do you know about where the water would come from for these proposed wells?
Well, the proposed, they have to have the water rights to get the water to frack with. And they have bought some rights. You know, they may lease some others. I know for a fact that this year, before the year even started, that SG scaled back on any drilling, a lot of the drilling they had planned, just because they knew that water was going to be an issue. So there again, it's responsibility of, and hopefully, knock on wood, we don't have another year next year like this year, or, you know, I think they will have some hard time even getting enough water. That could affect their productivity also, just as everybody else's. But state water law dictates who's got the water, and it's pretty hard to get around that. The water commissioners are pretty, they know their stuff, and they adhere to it pretty well. If you look at some of these drier mesas that don't have the number one water rights, you can tell this year because some of them didn't run any water, so. That gets into state law.
Mm-hmm.
If you just joined us, this is the September Delta County Commissioner's Report, and we're very happy to have our 3rd District Commissioner, Mr. Mark Rober, as our guest. Mark, according to the Colorado Department of Agriculture, the state agency that regulates the cultivation of industrial hemp, close to 1,200 acres in Delta County have been registered for the growth of this product, industrial hemp. What significance does this have with respect to the agricultural economy of Delta County, if any?
I think it remains to be seen. Yeah. You know, right now there is a big market for the oils, mainly out of hemp. And it's a potential that I think a lot of people are looking at and grabbing onto, and, you know, I support it. I think they're lacking some infrastructure as far as getting the oils out and being able to ship and everything else, which can come. But it remains to be seen of how much of an impact it'll have, because it's basically another commodity, and at some point, if you supply and demand takes over, and it may not be quite as lucrative as what a lot of people are counting on, But I hope for the best and wish him success.
Do you think it's going to create any additional problems with respect to the other uses of hemp and so marijuana and so on, or is that insignificant?
Well, there's varying theories on that. I mean, some people that are saying, you know, yeah, grow all the hemp you can because that's going to cross-pollinate and take the THC down on marijuana, and that'll help curb that market. And there's also concerns. I mean, it's kind of a relatively unknown. We don't know. Are we introducing a non-native species that then proliferates on its own, and then we, like a lot of other non-native species, becomes an invasive weed somewhere? There's a lot of unknowns yet to do with hemp, and you know, we'll just have to work through them.
But in the long run, you would agree it's probably a good thing. It's a new product.
It's a new product. It has potential.
And
I look forward, you know, I look forward to seeing it continue.
Sure. Allie?
The commissioner signed a letter in support of Grand Junction Airport Authority's initiative to create a foreign-free trade zone within a 90-mile radius of the airport and a customs office at the airport. The zone would make it possible for area businesses to buy and export foreign goods more easily. Can you tell us what this is all about and why the commissioners weighed in on it?
Well, we were approached and asked to write a letter of support by the Grand Junction Chamber of Commerce and several other entities that were involved in it. I mean, if you believe in free trade and economic growth, it's kind of there's no downside to it. So that was basically the reason we signed on. And currently there were no strings attached to monies, so it was basically a no cost to us. So we just signed a letter of support, and that we are looking forward to potential of being able to ship and receive out of Grand Junction Airport, and hopefully it'll help some local businesses, and which is all economic development. So
mm-hmm.
Grand Junction doesn't have the customs office or custom service, so that's basically what it would do. The nearest one is Denver or Salt Lake, and if you travel international, you know you don't go through customs in Grand Junction, so it's kind of trying to get with the big boys.
Uh-huh. Gonna be all grown up and have customs.
Yeah, there you go.
So you've recently been voted in as president of the Colorado Counties Incorporated Board of Directors, CCI, which is a nonprofit membership association whose purpose is to aid county commissioners and to encourage counties to work together on common issues. Can you tell us more about this association and what you feel the benefits of your involvement might be for Delta County?
Colorado Counties is probably at least 100 years old of county organization that tries to get the state legislature, mainly the state legislature, to listen to counties, because county government is, in reality, if you read how the Constitution was formed, county government is a arm of the state. Well, sometimes we've been counties get put down to maybe the little finger, and the state doesn't necessarily get too concerned about what they mandate down, and so that's a lot of what Colorado Counties does, is try and keep the state thinking about county government is closer to the people, it's closer to the ground, it's where the real action happens, and that any of the bills that they pass need to take counties into account. So that's a lot of what Colorado Counties does, is kind of lobby the state government to make sure that counties aren't left out of the loop as far as what's going to happen to them.
Mm-hmm. And you feel like they're effective in that way?
They have been. They have been, you know, the biggest thing with any partnerships or collaboration processes is give and take. And there is difference of opinion within counties. And sometimes people take their marbles and go home. But for the most part, you know, on a lot of issues, the majority of counties are going to agree on and try and fight for the same issues as far as road funds and protecting the water and all those issues. And a lot of it has to do with Health and Human Services, which, you know, is a state. The state funds a lot of that, either the state or federal government. A lot of Health and Human Services is funded on an 80-20 basis, so the state funds 80%, the county funds 20. Usually the 20% takes care of staff. But you have to continually watch that because sometimes with all the new programs coming in, we can't hire enough staff to keep up with just all the data that they have to collect.
Mm-hmm.
And mandate. So that's a lot of what Colorado Counties does. It's, you know, it's another thing on my plate. I don't look for it to take a vast majority of time, but I will be making more trips to Denver mm-hmm. this year.
Okay.
I want to ask you, you've started to work on the 2019 budget, I believe.
We're just starting.
The DCI today made a statement that confused me, and I'm just wondering exactly what it meant. They said, we still have challenges through property tax revenues continue to decline because of the Gallagher Amendment. What does that mean?
Well, the Gallagher Amendment, which was a 1982 constitutional amendment to the Colorado government, dictated that what the Gallagher Amendment did was it dictated you had to keep a balance of commercial taxes to residential taxes. And it's 45-55 was the balance. Well, what Colorado has seen, especially here in the last 10 years, is all of our growth is in residential growth and not in commercial growth. So what Gallagher did was it ratchets down the taxes on residential property so that it matches that 55% of commercial. So what's happening to most of rural Colorado, it's not happening so much to the Front Range because they've experienced such great residential growth. But if you're slow in residential growth, you're ratcheting down the tax. And see, this year, the taxes on houses, residential houses, is at 7.2. And the projection is it's going to go to 6.2. So continually, we're going to be getting less and less money out of property tax unless we have a big boom.
You're going to get less money out of?
Property tax.
Property tax, yes.
Unless you get a big boom in commercial, because the commercial tax is 29%. Just as a reference, in 1982, the residential tax was at 21%. So it has ratcheted down over time to where it's actually bringing in less money. And if that continues, a lot of rural counties are going to be in a world of hurt.
So can we expect any surprises in your next year's budget, or is it pretty routine as you see it now?
I don't think there'll be any surprises. You know, like I say, we're just starting in on it. Sales tax has seen some growth. It looks like we're coming out of the recession finally. We've had people move in, population is back up almost to what it was before the coal mine shut down. We were at, in 2014, we actually led the state in people moving away. It's come back. We're almost back to that high of 30,800 and something. I think we're at 30,500 now. But we did drop down, clear down to in the 29,000 something. So we're, we're seeing new construction. We're seeing people moving into the area. Haven't seen a lot of, as far as, we still don't have much in the way of industrial, though. The marble business in Delta is growing, investing quite a bit of money there. But overall, we're on the upward scale, and if we don't get hit with another nationwide recession, I think we're looking good. I don't see any big changes to the budget. We did get a little bit of a windfall from Senate Bill 1, which will go into the Road and Bridge Department. So, we'll have to sit down and prioritize where to spend that money. I don't see any big, nothing looming that's going to catch anybody by surprise.
And you're confident you can keep the county debt-free the way it's been?
Oh, I think we're committed to that.
Yeah.
We may have to look at doing something in our... Going back to a previous conversation about health and human services, it continues to be kind of a growth industry.
Mm-hmm.
And we're maybe outgrowing that building. We may have to do something in terms of trying to house them and do some reconfiguration on the county courthouse system as far as moving people around.
Is that because... poverty is going up in our county?
Well, it's not just our county. It's nationwide. And, they continue to ratchet up the poverty level. And so more and more people qualify. And then with the health system that this state enacted, everybody has to call in to... first be denied for Medicaid before they can get a insurance somewhere else. So, it's just taken more and more staff. There is no shortage of poverty, that's for sure. I'm not saying that we are not poverty. We do have a rising population, but I see that statewide and even nationwide.
I think that's our time for today. We want
went
to
by quick.
I know.
We want to thank Mr. Robert for coming in and talking to us. You have been listening to the Delta County Commissioner's Report with Mark Robert, the 3rd District Commissioner. And I thank Allie for joining me and her contribution to today's discussion. And for KVNF, I'm Felix Belmont.